Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'll be talking about your undercover. In the last weeks, I've been talking about our cover story, that definition, that identity of ourselves, which is what we present to the world and what we actually believe is all there is to us. But we are all more, some of us very much more, and that more is what we keep hidden undercover. Not only hidden from everyone else, but also hidden from ourselves. And that more, that undercover, can contain aspects, qualities that we really need. So it's very useful to know what we're hiding undercover so that we can begin to recover it. Today, I'll be talking about some of the ways that you can uncover what may be undercover for you. And I'll be playing an interview in my Anatomy of an Interview series with graphic artist Vicky Rallo, who is someone who actually did discover an important quality of hers that she had undercover for a very long time. So hang on, here comes the show. The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about discovering and becoming who you really are. Most people I know think that they are just who they are. That is, that the way they've been acting, the way people treat them, the things that they think about themselves and present to the world is really all there is to them. But as a psychotherapist who's been practicing for more than 30 years, I am convinced that that is virtually never the truth. Somehow, early in our life, we all created a story. I call it our cover story. It contains the qualities, abilities, beliefs, and actions that we think, well, for one reason or another, were safe for us to express. But we are much, much more than that. We have many qualities, sometimes for some people, the most important qualities, behaviors, abilities, skills, talents, but we don't know about them. If the things that we present and think about ourselves are our cover story, then the qualities and behaviors and attitudes and skills that we are unaware of have gone undercover. We all have undercover qualities, which we not only don't present to the world, but which we long ago have forgotten. So we don't even know we have them. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about how you can discover some of your undercover. Why would we want to do that? Well, sometimes, maybe even most of the time, some of the qualities, abilities, memories, skills, talents, thoughts, ideas, creativity, courage that we have had to place undercover are precisely the things that we need to have the best life that is possible for us. And here I'm not talking about skills and things that you have to learn or develop or somehow attach to yourself. I'm talking about things that already belong to you, that are just waiting there to be discovered. Not only are we missing them when we could be using them, but even though you're not aware of it, it takes a certain amount of energy to suppress anything. And so uncovering these qualities also can create a burst of energy that you also didn't know you had. Now, why wouldn't we do that if I'm saying, you know, here we have this gold mine there that we could literally mine and use? Well, the reason we put this stuff undercover is because in some way it endangered or threatened to embarrass or get us into some kind of trouble. We learned that these qualities, these abilities, these attributes, they either didn't work in our family, they were considered taboo, or a particular parent didn't like them, or we had an experience in school or in the wider world or with our siblings or with our friends that taught us that a particular way of being in the world was unpleasant. It didn't go down well. It brought out a response, a circumstance, a consequence, which we didn't want to have. So we came to think of that quality as something ugly. And the way that we kept it down was by continuing to think of it as ugly. So just as an example, suppose really early on, you were a pretty exuberant kid. You laughed out loud and you jumped up and down and you everything was really big for you, which is, you know, kind of common in small children, you know, that woohoo thing, you know, that they can do about everything. Well, suppose you came from a family that thought that either children should be seen and not heard in the extreme, or even just parents who were trying to pass, you know, and were embarrassed by loud noises, thought it was embarrassing, you know, what would the neighbors think and stuff like that. So they did everything from scowling at you or rolling their eyes or ignoring you to write out punishing you for such behavior. Now, there is nothing wrong with exuberance. In fact, the ability to really enjoy life goes hand in hand with exuberance. That's not a bad quality. But if you were forced to place that quality undercover, then you don't have it. And it can be getting in your way. It's possible that you have not found a work that really turns you on because it threatens to stimulate that quality of exuberance which you know you need to keep down. Or maybe you just can't really enjoy life. You know, you're kind of a quiet sexual partner. You don't really join in when other people are having a really good time. All of these things are possible for you. Your exuberance has not gone away because we cannot amputate a part of ourselves. But you don't want to express that. And any time that the exuberance in you gets triggered, you feel uncomfortable, anxious. So, in today's show, I'm going to talk a little bit about how you can identify some qualities that might be undercover for you. You don't have to go ahead and do anything with it. It's just useful to know what might be undercover. Perhaps you know the quote from Shakespeare, "The lady doth protest too much." Well, that is often a clue to an undercover. And an important way to identify an undercover is to notice which qualities in other people make you angry or uncomfortable. Not only your family members, but almost anyone who annoys or upsets you can be demonstrating your undercover quality. When we recognize our own hated undercover qualities in other people, these otherwise carefully hidden aspects of ourselves, they waken up and they jump up and down and vie for our attention. "That's me too," they scream inside us. "Recognize me, acknowledge me, know me." But as long as admitting to these qualities would put us in too much danger, we just can't afford to recognize them. We must instead find ways to separate ourselves from these qualities. And one of the ways that we persuade ourselves that these qualities don't belong to us, this is not me, is by criticizing them when we spot them in others. That is, we protest against these qualities too much. You can acquire valuable information about your undercover qualities by looking at those people who really make you uncomfortable. Even the character in a movie or a novel who makes your skin crawl, the relative you just cannot bear to be around, the coworker you don't even know very well, but you're sure you don't want to get to know. What groups or kinds of people can't you help making fun of or ridiculing? Who turns you off even when you can't think of any good reason that they should? Family members, friends, and even strangers can be really useful in helping you find your undercover. So I'm going to give you an example of a client who came to see me. Lucy sneered at her neighbor for the laziness she was desperately trying to deny in herself. Lucy was working too hard, but she couldn't make herself slow down. She was driven by her conscientious cover. Remember, the cover story is the thing that you present because you think that's what you needed to be, have to be. Lucy's conscientious cover, which she believed was responsible for her success and the admiration of her colleagues, was driving her. In a therapy session, she suddenly began to talk about her next-door neighbor. "He's such a couch potato," she said. "He can spend an entire afternoon just sitting there watching TV. I don't know how he does it." With this declaration, Lucy distanced herself from the couch potato-like behavior. And in doing so, she assured herself that she would never commit such a sin. Lucy's parents had continually acclaimed her as hardworking and condemned her brother as lazy. Lucy kept her own ability to be lazy a secret, even from herself. As long as she couldn't afford to admit her own laziness, criticizing this quality in her neighbor protected her from having to recognize it in herself. The problem was that until she could recognize and uncover her capacity to be lazy, she was busy driving herself into a breakdown. Until she could balance her conscientious cover with her ability to goof off undercover, she was endangering her very health. The more passionately you react, the more black and white an issue seems to you, the more likely it is that you're in the presence of an undercover quality. Accepting, even considering that these things might be true of you, can be painful and scary. After all, you've probably devoted your whole life to hiding this disturbing quality, even from yourself. You may still believe that your image, your self-esteem, your acceptance, or even your life depends on keeping this trait a secret. Much like Lucy was desperately afraid that if anybody knew that she had the capacity to be lazy, she would lose the admiration of those people who mattered the most to her. Undercovers are concealed because their exposure will put us in some kind of danger. Lucy's denial of her lazy undercover protected her self-image, which was solidly based on her conscientious cover story. You always have a good reason for hiding certain qualities undercover and continuing to present your cover story qualities, even when the one doesn't work and the other one is necessary. So, while you've been listening to me, have you even begun to think of what you might be hiding undercover? Here's a clue. Whatever it is you think is really important about yourself, the way Lucy thought that her conscientious cover was important about herself, the chances are good that the opposite of that also belongs to you, but you had to hide it undercover. So, be very gentle with yourself. We only hide qualities which we think are going to get us in trouble. So you don't want to be cavalier about this. But you also want to give yourself an opportunity to surface something that you might be needing. Remember, until Lucy could accept the fact that she could goof off, laze off, stop working for a change, she was beginning to endanger her health. So ask yourself, what might you be hiding undercover that you could be using? And if you want to write to me, please do at thelynnshow.com. That is thelynnshow. Write to me. Tell me what you think. Do you think you have an undercover? Do you have any idea what it is? Do you know who really pisses you off? Is it somebody who's lazy? Well, please let me know. Now, I'm going to do the other thing I do in this show, and that is play an interview with an artist. These are interviews from my Anatomy of an Artist series, and this artist is Vicki Rallo. And Vicki is particularly interesting because she didn't discover until, I don't know, she was probably 30. She doesn't say in the interview, but she'd already graduated from college and had a very long career. Well, I don't know if it was very long, but it seemed like it had gone on for a long time, long enough for her to have two children. And it wasn't until late that she discovered, as she says, a talent she didn't know she had. She didn't know she had it. And not only did she discover it, but it became the hallmark, the forefront, the definition of the rest of her life. So, it is possible to recover an undercover quality, talent, ability, skill, and embrace it. And you can hear, when you hear Vicki talking about her art, that that's exactly what happened for her. So here is the extremely talented and very passionate Vicki Rallo. So I'm here with Vicki Rallo in her lovely house, looking out at her lovely foliage.
All those weeds.
Yes, none of us has time. None of us has time for landscaping.
That's right.
So I'm going to tell Vicki what I tell everybody. I interview people who make their living or their life with their art. I know that this is true for you. And I ask them all the same question, which is, how did it happen? How did you find it? How did it find you?
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting story. It's a fun story. I grew up in a household with a very talented father who taught himself to draw and paint, but did it entirely for himself. He never took a class. He never showed anybody his work.
Wow.
And he never felt that it was a career.
When you say he never showed anybody his work, you mean even the family? Or
well, the family.
Because they were standing around, right?
Right, but, you know, he gave it to you if you asked him for it. But,
right.
You know, he didn't feel that it was an extraordinary talent. And so, anyways, he directed all of his children to pursue careers in what he considered to be valid professions.
Right.
And so I went to school and got a degree in biology from the University of Pittsburgh and was a medical technologist for 10 years.
Wow.
And just circumstances in my life kind of made me become somewhat disenchanted with the career. And then I had kids and, you know, this sort of thing. And working 3 to 11 and 11 to 7 just really wasn't good for family. So in the meantime, I met a woman who became a very, very good friend. And she convinced me to take an art class.
Just apropos of nothing? Oh, by the way, why don't you?
She said, trust me.
Oh, my.
You need to take an art class.
Wow.
And so...
Do you know what made her say that? Did you ever ask her?
Well, she's one of those very intuitive people.
Clearly.
And she was an artist, too.
Ah, okay. Right.
So I did.
What did you take?
I took a drawing class at a community college in Jamestown, New York. Mm-hmm. And discovered that I had an talent that I wasn't aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I just started to pursue it.
Pursue it, meaning?
Taking classes whenever I could. Mm-hmm. And
but again, like your father, just because you liked it and or not? Because you
just
thought...
Because I was amazed that I had something about myself that I didn't know. And I wanted to pursue it and see where it went.
And it felt good.
And it felt good.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was still very much involved with raising two kids, and I had a part-time job, and, you know, we were moving. And, I mean, just all kinds of things got in the way. But I consistently took a class every time I could.
Mm-hmm.
And explored painting and, you know, just pushing myself in that direction and loving it.
Yeah.
And so our life kept moving on, you know, and we were now living in Indiana, and we followed my husband's job several times, which was one of the reasons why I kept having to work night shift. But the opportunity came about in which we were going to be able to pretty much move wherever we wanted to go. And my husband said, you know, this would be a great time if you wanted to go back to school. And so I thought, wow, what a... This would be really fun, and who knows where it would take me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started looking. We decided after living up north for our whole lives that we wanted to move south. One of the schools that came up in front of me was Ringling.
Mm-hmm.
And I came down and visited the school, and I would be able to get a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in 3 years because of my existing... my existing degree,
mm-hmm.
which would save me lots of money and bring me to one of the most beautiful places I'd ever seen. So I went back home and I said, honey, we're moving to Sarasota. And what an empowering feeling that was to all of a sudden be the director, be the trailblazer for our family. And so we moved to Sarasota in 1987 and I went to Ringling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big, you know, that's the whole kind of synopsis, a summary of the whole, how it all came to be.
So when you get a Bachelor in Fine Arts, do you have to have an art specialty, or is it?
Well, you choose a major, and at the time, Ringling was a 3-year school. It is now a full college.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, it worked out perfectly for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I chose computer design because at the time, it was in its infancy, but I felt that it was going to take over.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were right.
And so I moved in that direction. And I also am, you know, I wanted to make sure that I had something that I could get a job at. And so commercial design or graphic design seemed like a real good fit for me. And I wasn't interested in animation, unfortunately, because that's where all the money is. I chose the two-dimensional design. Mm-hmm. And so graduated in 1990, and my first job was for the Oslo Center for the Performing Arts.
Wow.
Which...
Right next door.
Right next door. They had a computer. Nobody knew how to use it.
Huh?
And I just walked right into it.
Wow.
Which was wonderful. You know, it was really great. I loved working for the Oslo. It was really an exciting place. I mean, it was always... And surrounded by not just art, you know, visual art, but the performing art aspect. I had never spent any amount of time exploring, and so it was right there, and I loved it. I had an autonomous job, and I could pretty much come and go as I pleased as long as I met all my deadlines.
Right.
And we had a great crew. The energy there was so positive, in spite of the fact that we were on the brink of bankruptcy every week. Which was, you know, that was pretty interesting too. But I worked for the Oslo for 4 years. And then I started my own company,
mm-hmm.
Rollo Design, which is a freelance graphic design company.
Yes.
And
from which I have benefited.
That's right. That's right. And I have been, you know, helping people in the area, businesses and clients in the area for 15 plus years.
Wow. Okay, so then that is not all of your art.
No. I've always been I guess would be considered a multitasker.
Aha.
And I'm not a TV watcher. And I'm not a big reader. I do read, but I'm a hands-on person. And maybe that's what my girlfriend saw.
Maybe.
You know, that I needed to be able to express myself with my hands.
Yeah, you're a kinesthetic mm-hmm. person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So 15 years ago, when I was actually at the Oslo, a friend invited me to a bead show. And so we went, and I picked up a few things just because it looked like something fun to do. And
so this is, they were selling beads, different color, different shapes,
stones, you know, all the kinds of things that go into making jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I picked up a few pieces, and I thought, I'll just make myself something. And it steadily grew from that because... If you've ever talked to anybody that does beads or finds that they have a passion for something, they just start accumulating and they start buying it. And all of a sudden I had this huge collection of beads and I'm still making bracelets and things for myself. And I started exploring making jewelry for other people. And it grew from that. And so I have had this side business now for quite a few years of making one-of-a-kind pieces,
right.
Mm-hmm. And selling it mm-hmm. and doing art fairs and putting it in art galleries. And I just, you know, it's a natural move, I think, for me to want to take things to the next level
mm-hmm.
and see where it goes. You know, I'm never one that's going to go over to China and set up a factory of my bead designs. That will never happen. I won't go to that extent. But I love to create it, and it, you know, it takes me to another place. It gets me out of the computer, which is very boxed and somewhat controlled.
In the box.
Yeah.
It gets you out of the box.
Gets me out of the box.
Right.
And so I love to make jewelry, and I'm exploring different ways to get it out there for the market.
Mm-hmm.
But I have it in my own gallery, which I opened 3 years ago.
Yeah, talk about that.
Okay. Heart's Desire is a clothing boutique and an art gallery in the Village of the Arts in Bradenton. And, yeah, never one to sit still for any time. When the real estate market was going crazy 4 years ago, mm-hmm. and people were buying condos to flip and thinking that they were going to make big fortunes, my husband and I thought, maybe we should do something. Maybe we should buy a piece of property. And in the course of our search for the little piece of property that would give us some income, we found the Village of the Arts, never knowing that it existed. And we're just enamored with it. It's this charming little area in Bradenton, and with 1920s vintage cottages and bungalows that have been restored and turned into art galleries and restaurants and cafes. And it was just this wonderful little area, and we really fell in love with it. And so impulsively, again, it just reminds me of, honey, we're moving to Sarasota. Honey, you know, we're going to, and, you know, it also goes back to my husband saying, gee, if you want to move somewhere, we could do it now. I mean, we are not...
sedentary.
We're not sedentary, and we're minor risk takers.
I guess, in the grand scheme
of things, we're not big risk takers, but we do jump in there mm-hmm. with both feet because we are both really hard workers, and once we take on something, you know, we really work diligently to bring it up all about. So we bought this property up there and converted it into a store that shows my jewelry. Mm-hmm. I bring in other artists, and you know, I do love art, and not just my own, but I do love art of all forms. And so I have painters and ceramic artists. I have only my jewelry usually in the store, but then I also have local clothing designers.
They're not all just one of a kind designs, right?
No.
Because I know that some of them are, and they're wonderful.
Yeah, I have some of my purse designers and clothing designers bring me one-of-a-kind jackets and outfits. But I do supplement it with small design houses. Mm-hmm. I don't carry the same kind of clothes that you're going to find at the mall.
Right.
It's a pretty unique little space.
It sure is.
And I have a wonderful time being there and... trying to, you know, let the whole world know that it exists. So fortunately, my graphic design skills have been very good for me. I do my own marketing.
And actually, as we're speaking about that, you should give the website for Arlo Design and also for Heart's Desire.
Okay. The website for my graphic design services is Arlo Design .com. I always mix up. RolloDesign.com. That's RolloDesign.com. And the website for Heart's Desire is Heart's Desire, F as in Frank, L as in love.com. Unfortunately, there's some Heart's Desires out there that are lingerie sites and, you know, things like that.
There's a The Lynn Show without the E that is a strange woman with a lot of animals.
Well, I was getting calls for a while from people that thought it was an escort service. And I was like, oh my God, this is awful. Yeah, escort service. So it only was for a limited time, and then I don't know what happened. They stopped calling me, which was a relief.
Yes.
So it is heartsdesirefl.com.
As in Florida.
As in Florida.
Right.
Right. But also, I can invite people to go to thevillageoftheArts.com, uh-huh. which is the site for the village, which is has a lot of great information. And
it and where you are also listed?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Great.
So life continues to be very exciting since the girls have grown and gone, and they have they are also high achiever type people as a result. They're hardworking, and I am amazed. My daughter seems to find 36 hours in the day. I only have been able to find 24.
Did they take the artistic thing from you?
Not in that sense, but they are both in marketing.
Uh-huh.
And I think that shows. My one daughter is also a web designer, which involves a certain artistic capability.
Yes, it does.
But she's a writer, which is also very creative.
Mm-hmm.
So they're different skills.
I find myself wondering, did your dad get to see you doing this stuff with art?
Yes. It was an interesting, it's funny that you asked that question, because when I first told him that I was going to pursue a career in art, he was extremely upset with me and told me, and when I graduated from Ringling and was going to get my first job, he said, "I'll give you 5 years to discover that that's not really a job."
Wow.
So he really didn't accept the fact that I had done this and left my career in medical technology. But after being in it a few years, and when I started my own business, and he was impressed with my ability to use the computer. That was scientific.
Right.
It wasn't just
drawing,
putting pretty pictures on a piece of paper.
Right.
It was utilizing a scientific tool, and so that made it
all
okay.
Right. Wow.
So very strange. Very strange. But
It's so interesting because it sounds like he was somebody who didn't have full permission to accept his gift. You know, he had enough permission to do it, which is more than a lot of people have, but he didn't have whatever it requires to make it a part of him, make it a part of his life, that, you know, see what I do, that this is part of me, you know.
Yeah, it's been a puzzle that I have tried over the years to figure out why, but he was always a very closed person.
Mm-hmm.
And did not share. He did not believe in talking about emotions and what drove him, or he didn't examine his thoughts, you know, and that sort of thing. So I never really knew the answer to the question, and never will, you know.
Did any of your other siblings risk the art?
I have an older brother who pursued a career in cabinetry design.
Close.
And so he's very, very creative.
He rode the line, mm-hmm. sort of. That is a creative, you know, you have, right? But it's also a business.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So he found a way to straddle the line somehow.
And
was that okay with your dad?
I guess so. I don't know that I ever asked my brother if my father was...
Said, "I'll give you 5 years to figure out it," right?
No, I think that was more along a profession that, you know, was valid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it gave you a piece of furniture.
Yeah.
There was something concrete there that came out of the whole process, and that was okay.
You know, the thrust of the Lynn Show is discovering and becoming who you really are. And this is an interesting story because it suggests that art was very much in the DNA of your family. I mean, but your father, to some extent, could not become fully who he was, but you found a way to surface that part of yourself, to discover the part of you that you were not even consciously aware of.
Yeah, and it is really funny because long before I knew that I had this ability, I was really enamored with art. I really liked to go to every single art fair and art show that that came down the road, and loved museums, you know, this sort of thing. So it was speaking to me from my genes.
It was always there.
It was always there. And interestingly enough, my grandfather was a mold designer for a glass company.
Really?
Yeah. So he went to work every day into a factory.
Right.
And drew designs and constructed designs for them to use in the making of plates and vases and bowls and, you know, back then when they had all kinds of decorative glass, milk glass was one of the things that came out of the company that he worked for. And so he was an artist working
at... Was that your father's father?
My father's father.
Wow.
So it went back even...
Well, it almost certainly had to, right? So, but he did the same sort of thing. I mean, he...
And so that's why it was really surprising to me that my father thought that it wasn't a job.
Well, yeah, but your grandfather did it in a factory. I mean, he had a regular, he had a salary, right? Somebody paid him to, right? Did you know your grandfather?
Mm-hmm. But he was not, he was about the least expressive artist you would ever want to meet. You know, I didn't find out, you know, it was sort of like, boy, he doesn't paint or he doesn't try anything. You know, I would just feel like, I think that it would be something that except he was famous for his gardens.
Ah.
And so he would plant these extraordinary gardens.
And they would be beautiful.
And they would be beautiful and they'd be just roses, you know. So he expressed himself that way. He was a sensitive guy, but very, you know, very quiet and not very expressive.
Well, it sounds like this is this is not unusual, you know, for men to be discouraged from expressing the softer arts.
That's true.
And if they have that in them, then they have to find some way either to shut it down or to keep it quiet or to do it, you know, without saying, I'm an artist.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So, I mean, it makes me think that that's kind of what was going on in the men down the generation, you know, back down your generations. What about your mother?
My mother was a very talented seamstress.
Yeah, it's all the same stuff.
And so I remember, I mean, I have memories, and this, you know, goes, I think this is one of the reasons why my nights are busy until I crash. I remember watching them. I'd be doing my homework. And my brothers, of course, were at basketball. And they were sports driven in those days. But my mother would be at the sewing machine and my father would be at the dining room table in the same room. And he'd be painting or doing a pen and ink drawing and my mother would be sewing.
And they would be making things.
And they would be making
things. They would be creating things. Yes. Yeah, this is what it is. I mean, it's so interesting because it's really in your DNA.
Yes.
You know? And it sounds like you're the only person who, in that whole group, it's not the word I want, but, you know, that whole system, who has been able to make your life of it. To say, this is who I am, and this is how I'm going to spend my days, this is how I'm going to try and make a living, this is how I'm going to define myself, right?
Defining myself is probably closer to making a living.
Well, but actually, that's what I was aiming for. That's what I was going for, that you're the only person who was able to say, this is what I am, this is who I am.
Right.
And it's wonderful that you could.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I say when I do the show that the reason that I interview people who make their living or their life, because hard to make a living with your art, is because people who do that have to be who they really are.
Yes.
Because you can't do it.
Well, it is very difficult to, and this is one of the reasons why artists are very often very poor in marketing. And so they stay small and contained because there's so much energy and time involved in exploring your art, and the marketing aspect can be very distracting. And nowadays, with the demands of the internet and the amount of time that you spend on the social media and maintaining your website and getting your art up on the website so that you can sell it to supposedly a larger audience, you could spend most of your day doing that and not have a lot of time for your art.
Right.
And that's the dilemma. Or if you hire somebody to market you, there's your livelihood going to somebody else.
Right.
So it is a dilemma, and it's really hard to figure out where the balance is.
Well, and again, nobody would do that unless it was who they really were.
Right.
Nobody would choose this in this culture.
That's true.
Unless they couldn't help it.
Yeah. Well, and there are... I was never a materialistic person, okay? So having lots of things was never really important to me. I never had it when I was growing up, and I was a perfectly happy and contented person mm-hmm. without all the stuff.
Right.
So I would rather have a used car and have it be a functional used car and be able to buy a piece of art that I will have in my home and enjoy for years and years and years.
Right.
That's the way I think. And fortunately, that's the way my husband thinks, too. Mm-hmm. So we both drive old cars. But we have some great art in our, you know.
Well, your life is surrounded with art.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's in your house. It's in your store. It's in your computer. It's, you know, I mean, it's in your fingers, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
I know. It's lovely. And is there anything I didn't ask you that you think I might have asked?
Oh, dear. Well, I feel like I want to... I'm always impressed with the level that people will... Let me say this differently. The choices that people will make to pursue that passion, that burning drive within them. And they're willing to live on nothing sometimes, and they're willing to take risks and make sacrifices and that sort of thing. And it is in today's society, I think it becomes even more difficult for people like me to make a living. When I graduated from college, I remember that they quoted me a percentage that only 5% of people who graduated with fine arts degrees stayed in the job.
Yeah. Well, your father was right.
Because it was so difficult. I never told him that. And so it is a challenge if you choose a career path in art that not everybody can make a living at it. And I'm very fortunate in that I have a long-time partner that helps supplement them, you know. Mm-hmm. We work
right.
together jointly to
right.
provide income for the family. And I didn't always pursue it as a full-time career.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can be very challenging and very time-consuming and a lot of hard work to try and make it a career.
Yes, yeah. You answered the next question. The question I always end with is, you know, what is it like? What would you say about living a life of art? And that is what almost everybody says. And it is for that reason that I know that when I interview people who have dedicated large portions of their life to their art, whether they made a living with it or not, it's because it's congruent for them. It is who they are. It's not something that they are doing because somebody told them that they had to, or because it's the family business, or because they thought they'd make a lot of money at it, or because there's no reason for it except that they had to do it, you know? And that connection to your essential self is what I am hoping everybody will find, whether it is as an artist or not, you know?
Right.
So you demonstrate that so very nicely and articulately. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Lynn.
I never know what I'm going to hear when I set out to interview people, even people I know pretty well, and I know Vicky pretty well. But I did not know this story. I didn't know that she discovered her talent, discovered, as she says, what she didn't know about herself until someone casually said, you should take an art class. Not everybody is lucky enough to get that kind of stimulation, to get that kind of encouragement, if they manage to get to the age Vicky was without having discovered what they don't know about themselves. So for most of us, we have to do that work ourselves. We have to consider that we are more than we thought we were. We have to ask ourselves, what could be hiding in there? You know, and as Vicky said, she always knew art had a special place for her. She could always feel the pull to museums, to art fairs. She always knew art was important. What she didn't know was that she was an artist. So what is it? Is there something that really makes you smile, that when you're in the presence of it, you lose track of time? Is it gardening or music or reading or crocheting or dancing or, I don't know, and it doesn't have to be an art form. You know, maybe it's numbers. Maybe numbers really turn you on and you should be immersed in them, but you're not because somebody told you had to teach history. I don't know. I hope that in listening to people like Vicky, that you get an opportunity to ask yourself, what is the more about me? What is there that I could be, that I actually am? What am I keeping from myself? Who am I hiding in there? There is an advantage to getting older, because we do sometimes feel there's not that much to lose if we take those risks. But you don't have to wait. You can begin to look for the more of you today. And you might begin by looking at what you protest too much about. What are those qualities? Is exuberance in somebody, does that always make you uncomfortable? You know, do you feel it in your stomach when somebody laughs too loud at a joke or something like that? Or maybe it's shyness that gets you. You know, you see that shy person in the corner and you want to say, what's the matter with that person? Maybe there's somebody inside of you who wants to be a little bit more reclusive, who doesn't want to have to be in center stage all the time, who wants to be able to let the world go by a little bit. Or maybe it's that you got that conscientious, better work, better do it, better get, you know, good, better, best, never let it rest cover story. And what you really need is to discover the more that is actually less. That's a very, very common American trait. Even those of us who don't actually act on it believe we should. So, I hope that, as always, this show has made you reflect on yourself and maybe find some of that more. Okay, I can't end the show without thanking the ever-valuable Josh Hackney, who will come here pretty soon and listen to this show and fix whatever I did wrong, make it sound as good as it can sound. So if you ever have sound problems with this, you know it's me, because Josh comes and does whatever can be done. Not only that, he will show me how to, let me see now, transfer a song from a cassette player to my to an MP3 so that I can put it on a CD, because my cassettes of old songs are stretching and I'm going to lose them if I don't get to put them on CD, and he's going to show me how to do that. And pretty much anything else that I can think of that has to do with computing or recording or electronics or editing, or, well, I can ask Josh almost anything, because if he doesn't know it, I know he knows how to find it. So if you've got questions like that, you want Josh Hackney. And you can find him by going to my website. I don't remember whether I gave it or not, but I'm going to give it now. It is thelynshow.com. That is thelynneshow. I spell Lynn with an E at the end. If you leave the E out, you're going to get a different Lynn. So you can go up on thelynshow.com. And, I think I did mention it earlier when I said you could write to me about the undercovers that you may or may not be discovering, but you can also ask me about Josh. And if you didn't write down Vicki Rollo's websites, you can ask me about Vicki. So, as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show, something that interested you, compelled you, amused you, stimulated you, something that will bring you back, because, as always, I will be here again next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I turning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'll I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang, so...